Over the Mall is brought to you by Soccer America. Soccer America, the soccer paper of record. Go to socceramerica.com and sign up for your subscription today. More information on all our sponsors at overtheball.com/sponsors.
Hey, this is Bob Lee, and you're listening to Over the Ball with Kevin Flynn, the world's game from an American perspective.
Hey, hello, everyone, and welcome to Over the Ball with Kevin Flynn and Dave Gallego. Today on OTB, David, I'm very excited. We have Stephen Goff in the Washington Post. The Washington Post is pulling in a couple of Pulitzer Prizes, and now we have Stephen Goff. I've been following this guy for a long, long time. I have never talked to him personally, so this will be interesting. Good get again, Dave.
Yeah, no, he's a great soccer commentator, and it's so nice when you have people that just focus on one sport. And obviously, since the advent of the MLS, you're seeing more and more of this, and these guys know what they're talking about.
Well, they should. They're getting paid, but he does it in a very I've been following him for a long time, so he's done it for a long time, and he's always up on all the stuff. And so, like I said, I have not talked to him, so it should be interesting. I want to talk about Copa America, and we could even mention Champions League today. Some of the injuries to Tyler Adams. He tore, Tyler Adams with the hamstring pull. He does not seem to be playing very much, which worries me about, the summer. And then Sergino Dest, an ACL injury. And I got to be honest. Look, I love watching that kid play. He's a handful. It's seemingly emotionally and physically, because he's such a great player with these great bursts of greatness. But I've always said, Dave, watching him play, it's almost like Gio Reyna. They're so thin in the legs that you worry about an injury, because they're the type of players that both hold on to the ball a bit and they're taking their hits. And you look at a player like Messi, he's built more like a Barry Sanders. He's low to the ground. Bigger legs, you can withstand the hits, the injuries, the impact. And so I worry. And so one of the things that happens when you get an ACL injury is you work your legs hard because you have to make all the muscles around that area even stronger. And a couple of guys that I've played with, hurt their ACL. They hit the weight room hard. They hit yoga hard. They came back with bigger legs. So I'm hoping Sergino Dest, he's got a year, man. He's got a year ahead of him, and he's was trying to get his contract renewed. So I'm worried. Between Dest and Adams, I'm worried about. Those are two big key injuries.
Yeah, you're right. We certainly don't have the depth that we would like. But we'll see what's going to happen. I mean, another thing I want to talk to Steven about is, can you believe that D.C. was left off the list of hosts? Cities for the World Cup, our nation's capital. I got to speak to him about that. That's got to be demoralizing for the city.
I'm not surprised. They just don't have the facility, I don't think. And every time, when I was playing, we played at RFK, which was just a horrible field. But look, Dan Snyder and the Washington Redskins have been dealing. I can't even say that. The Commanders now. I just said it. I think I still say the Baltimore Colts. Just growing up, that's how old I am. But I think. They didn't do their work. They didn't build the infrastructure that it takes. And FIFA doesn't care what your local rep is. It's like they come in and, the surprising thing to me, or maybe not so surprising, is Patriot Place. Where the Patriots play. I hate that stadium as a soccer pitch because it's just, it's turf. So they're going to put the grass down. I get it. But it just makes you seem like, well, why do you have the Revolution play there if they're playing on turf all the time and this big curved pitch, it just drives me crazy. But it seems like Kraft just kind of gets everything. He's having his kid.
No, I agree. But in terms of like the nation's capital, so any country that hosts the World Cup, you'd be hard pressed to find any country that doesn't have games in their capital. I mean, Wembley, Madrid, Paris. Now you have the States, and DC is being left out. Anyway, I want his thoughts on that because. I don't know if it was a shock to him or not, but again, symbolically, not playing in D.C., it's a little odd. But anyway, we'll find out what Stephen's thoughts are. No,
but first of all, Washington, D.C. is, it's the nation's capital, but, representation, what is it, taxation without representation?
Without representation, yeah.
Yeah, so it's sort of, it's been a bone of contention. It's not like New York City or Los Angeles or Chicago, right? It's D.C. It's our nation's capital, but it's not really a capital city. You go a couple miles one way, you're in Baltimore, you're a couple miles the other way, you're in Virginia. So it's a little tiny place. And I think
and a couple of miles the other way, you're in Philly.
Right. So
anyway, whatever. We'll see. We'll see. No, so,
right.
So a lot to talk about. I want to talk about Rooney. I want to talk about their developmental teams or lack thereof. Anyway, we'll get into that with Steven. Looking forward to chatting with him.
Yeah, so we'll get to that in a second. And I also was a Messi with 5 assists the other day. I sometimes he is amazing. The guys are, I feel like, great players that you go against. You kind of get in your head, and you either go in too aggressively, and they buzz by you, or you give them too much of a cushion, and then they take you on. I don't know what it is, but I don't know whether it's a good thing or bad thing for Messi to get 5 assists when people look at MLS and think about our league and say, you know, is it up to snuff? And, you know, FIFA's Gianni Infantino this past week criticized MLS. He said they need to bring in more name players, marquee players. And so, coming from my perspective, the game has grown incredibly here in this country. The level of play in MLS is definitely up there. As I said, I was in Argentina earlier this year. I thought we were right up there with their league. Not to say that we have the players that they have and the depth they have, but I felt like our league was right up there watching them play for 10 days. So I don't know. I don't know. Do we get more players and it eliminates American spots? Do we, you know, get these guys? I mean, Miami is pretty stacked with named players, and look, it's starting to pay results.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I mean, Messi's not going to have 5 assists if he's playing in France or if he's playing in Spain or England. I mean, let's face it.
He could have 5 in France, Ligue 1, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. But you know, I think signing more marquee players is going to help. And it's going to be MLS more watchable because, let's face it, you and I, let's be candid, we're not glued to our TVs when we watch the MLS.
Right.
I'd like to say I wouldn't be, but
wouldn't regret it.
Messi plays is a different story.
I'm so happy Messi's here. It's done so much for the game, domestically and with the Apple TV contract and everything. It's all been good. One regret I have is he did not play in the Premier League for a year or two. I would have just loved to see Messi play in the Premier League and see how he would have fared, probably quite well. But I would have liked to have seen that. But as I said, I'm glad he's here. So a lot of stuff to talk to Stephen Goff about. So let's take a quick break here. And we come back. The Washington Post's Stephen Goff will be our guest. All right. Joining us now on Over the Ball, as promised, Washington Post reporter Stephen Goff. Stephen, welcome to Over the Ball. How are you?
Hey, Steve.
Great to join you guys.
Hey, you know, I've read you for a long time, so I'm glad I finally got to see your face here on the Zoom here. And by the way, congratulations to the Washington Post for all the Pulitzers that they just won.
Yeah, well, sports department won all of them, so you know.
Yeah, exactly. Covering this crazy world we're in right now, but you know, like I said,
it was a great day for the paper to
absolutely pull in absolutely. Those big awards. And
Stephen, you were let's not be humble. I mean, you were probably the catalyst behind that, right?
Far from it. But
Stephen, as I said earlier, I've been following you for a long time, reading your stuff. You've followed this game before. You know, I said to you before country was cool. I appreciate that. I really do.
Thanks.
And I got to ask you this first. Let's go provincial just for a bit. DC United, they seem to be finding their form a little bit. Right now, you feel like they may be turning the corner, reclaiming some of their former glory?
Yeah, the pieces are in place. They made a really good hire in Troy Lesane, who oversaw the Red Bulls on an interim basis last year. He's really connected with the players. He's brought some good ideas, some high pressure. It's just better chemistry, better ideas. There's just a freshness there. They're not getting quite the results they want. They're 3-3-5, which is fine. But there've been some games where they've just left points on the table, but things are coming along. It's a long-term project. They have some quality players. They don't have a lot of depth. And you know, they'll see how it goes this year, but really they're aiming towards making a big move next year. I think
next year is the year.
I don't know if it's the year, but it's...
So basically, I'm sorry. So are they going to go out and get Messi? Is that what's happening?
No, I don't think that's going to happen. It's a team that's always been a little stingy with its spending in terms of designated players. So, you know, whether they make a big splash or not, we'll see. But right now, they're tied up with a lot of guaranteed contracts, players that aren't necessarily playing much, as well as some long-term injuries. So they'll get what they can out of this season. You know, if they can, I think the threshold is making the playoffs. If they can do that, I think that's progress. And then they'll go from there and make some pretty significant moves, I think, this offseason.
You know, two things, Stephen. I you notice with a new team like that, with a new coach, it does take them a while to get up to speed with this new style. They are pressing hard, kind of like in a Liverpool sort of way. The only downside I see with that when they have a very short bench is that players get fatigued, players get hurt, and it's tough to keep up that style the entire year.
Yeah. Well, you're saying they don't have much depth.
Yeah, and you really saw it in a glaring fashion against Orlando a few weeks ago. You know, they play so aggressively, they're locked in a tied match in the 90th minute. They're pressing forward, and they get caught on the counter. Not only is it a counter, but it's a 90th minute breakaway for the visiting team, and Duncan McGuire scores, and Orlando wins. It's just like I'd never seen that before.
Just heartbreaking.
A breakaway from the center circle. Late in the
So we talk about coaching. So way back when they hired Rooney as the head coach, and that was a splashy hire. What were kind of your thoughts on the hire at the time? Were you excited? And what were your thoughts after he left? In other words, what went wrong, other than not winning, of course?
You know, it was a big splash. They had a relationship with Rooney from when he was a player, so. There was that connection already established. Rooney was getting into coaching. So there was that part of it fell into place. But it was never a long-term solution. You know, he only signed, you know, a new coach comes in, big name, and he signs a 1.5-year contract. You know, that's unheard of. Chances are he wasn't going to stick around long. His ambition was to coach in England again and climb the ladder. So, you know, it was a good step at the time. Brought a lot of attention to the team. You know, but he's still given all, despite all his experience, he's a young coach. And so, you know, we think of Rooney as being, you know, a guy in his 50s, or he's been around the game for 40 years or whatever. But no, I mean, he's still young, and you know, it showed. It definitely showed, and he got what he could out of it. But they weren't going to spend big money. He was ready to go home. His family was back in England,
right?
So it was probably a mistake in the long term. Short term, it paid some dividends with selling some tickets and bringing attention to the club again. But
I think a year and a half contract kind of says it all, either from the money perspective or where they thought he was. I mean, you even look at a player like Frank Lampard, who seemed to be a little bit more of a heady player. And he even struggled as well. Sure. So, you know, you knew Rooney was going to struggle coaching, because it does take a while. Though I thought, didn't you, you interviewed him a bunch of times. You talked to him a bunch. I thought his family was here because they talked about how he enjoyed his kids going to school or anything in D.C.
When he was a player, they moved over.
Yeah.
And them living here, he loved them being here, but his wife wasn't comfortable here. I mean, you think about it, Rooney's a globally famous player, but he's lived his entire life in that Manchester Liverpool corridor, you know? I mean, he grew up in Liverpool, and he played in Manchester, you know, Everton, and he was in Derby for a bit, but he never played overseas. So it was a little uncomfortable, particularly for his wife. The kids were in school, but it was a lot. They depended a lot on family, and the family wasn't the extended family. They weren't here. So when he came back to coach, he was here on his own. I mean, his wife and kids would visit, you know, on school breaks and during the summer. And he would go over there any chance he could. But they never moved here when he was coaching.
Yeah, you know, you think about the players. It's easier for players sometimes because they get into the locker room. They're on the pitch with the boys, and they have camaraderie, and they have a support system. They're all built in. Yeah, it's tougher for the families, for sure. But, I've talked to a lot of the players, you know, who come over here, big names. Pep Guardiola walking around. I saw him in the Upper West Side of Manhattan walking around. Nobody recognized him, you know, and I think he just loved it. He just thought it was fantastic. So I think a lot of these players, you know, Klinsmann said the same thing when he came here. And one of the things Rooney said right away was the travel, because you go from DC to LA to play the Galaxy or LAFC. It's a long ass.
It's a hike. Yeah. A hike. You know, it's not like going from Man U to Man City. I mean, you know, you could walk there.
Yeah, it's a lot. I think players that come from overseas, particularly from Europe, who are accustomed to, you know, the motor coach or a train or maybe a short flight. You know, you're talking about time zones here. You're talking about different climates. Yes. You're talking about playing on grass, playing on turf, playing indoor, playing outdoor. And obviously the heat and humidity, which is here, is nothing like most of Europe. So it takes a toll. It definitely takes a toll. And, you know, I'm curious to see this summer. Although he'll miss a lot of time because of Copa America, how Messi deals with this. Now, Messi could deal with it, almost anything. We know that. But you know, it's a lot of wear and tear on a player, off the field. And, you know, you get down and playing games in Miami in that humidity, and then, you know, traveling up to, you know, Vancouver or something, and then going down to Houston for a game, in the heat.
That's brutal.
It's a lot. It's a lot different than just bouncing around England or Scotland or something.
Yep. So we are talking with Stephen Goff, and he has covered soccer at the Washington Post since the early 90s. Stephen, I know that you've covered basically every World Cup since 94, 14 overall, including women. So tell me your favorite memory out of all the World Cups, and maybe give me one crazy story you've got. I'm sure you've got a couple of crazy stories you can share with us.
Oh, man. Let's see. The best moments at World Cups. I mean, certainly, you know, things that happened most recently stick brightest in your mind. And so 2022 final with Argentina and France and Mbappe and Messi, you know, one of the great matches.
Wow, that was fantastic.
Yeah, so that one is high up there. I think being in South Korea in 2002 for the U.S. run was very different, being on the other side of the world and people, you know, back home having to watch in the middle of the night, or watching it, you know, on tape or whatever. So that was very different. And the fact the U.S. went so deep in the tournament with these two young, promising players named Donovan and Beasley leading the way. So,
and McBride.
And McBride was there. Yeah, sure. Tony Sana, John O'Brien, Reyna, of course. So, it was fantastic. Brad Friedel. So that one certainly stands out in terms of other individual games. I think just for the intensity and the emotion, I would certainly put the U.S. Italy match in 2006 in Germany.
Way back, yeah.
In Kaiserslautern, red cards and all. U.S. got a draw out of it. It was a very emotional match, and I don't know if that conveyed over TV or not, but it was pretty powerful. And along those lines, in 2006 was Germany losing to Italy in the semifinals in Dortmund. You know, it goes into extra time and Italy wins, and just the outpouring of emotion when that game ended, you know, tears on the German side and tears of joy on the Italian side. That was a big moment. Being in South Africa, just being in South Africa for a World Cup was pretty moving. Just the way the fans embraced it, and being on the African continent, going to a country that was just really learning about itself and democracy and growing, emerging equality. That was a powerful moment. Man, I say this, I guess, a little bit ironically now, but the World Cup that perhaps I had enjoyed the most was Russia in 2018.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, I love being there. I you know, things have changed an awful lot in the last 5-6 years. But Moscow was phenomenal. And I think part of it.
I hear great things about Moscow.
Yeah, Moscow is
very, very clean.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it had been spruced up because of a big tournament, but subways are amazing, and it's much more. You just there's a much greater range of people and food to eat and things than you picture. You know, you think about going to Moscow and you think about you're watching the Americans. You know, the series and everything's gray and grim and
right.
In a bad mood. Nah, it wasn't like that, and it wasn't just because there was a big soccer celebration going on. It was, you know, you really felt it. You really got a feel for it. So that was a great time. And as a reporter, there was the advantage for me and for the other U.S. reporters there. We didn't have a U.S. team to cover, so there wasn't the pressure of writing about every hamstring strain and you know, press conference. You could kind of just float around and do what you want and enjoy the moment and really catch your breath. So I think that enhanced the experience. So
you know, Stephen, I'm glad you brought up the Argentina-France final, because for me as a soccer fan, I used to say, you know, a lot of people just watch the finals and it's not always the best of games. It's sort of a chess match. They put up the roadblocks and everybody just kind of plays to not lose. And I try to tell them, you know, watching NFL football, the Super Bowl is kind of a yawner a lot of times as well. It's the playoffs that go up towards it that builds the excitement. And the one thing about that final was I was sitting with people that had never kicked or watched the soccer game before. We're out of their minds with excitement and about the raw talent was just oozing out of everybody, both sides of the pitch. It was just a fantastic game.
It was.
Yeah, it was tremendous. You know, we got a pretty good one in 2018 with France beating Croatia 4-2. So that was good. But this one was, you know, just back and forth and so many incredible moments in an extraordinary stadium in Doha, right outside Doha. You know, epic match.
Yeah.
Two of the great players of our era, or maybe all time, at the forefront. So yeah.
Who are those? Yeah. Who is that? Who are you naming?
A couple of the backup goalkeepers who didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But you know, I mean, on the subject of World Cups, tell me about your reaction, the local area's reaction to nation's capital being left off the list of host cities for the upcoming World Cup. What's that all about? I know there's a lot of competition, but it's our nation's capital.
Yeah, not a surprise. It was heading in that direction, and so the Washington bid ended up merging with the Baltimore bid. The problem with the Washington bid is the stadium. The Commander's Stadium in Landover is not an impressive place. FIFA was turned off by it, and they told the organizers, the local organizers, look, we're not playing a World Cup there. And so they merged with Baltimore, and Baltimore is a nice stadium, nice NFL stadium downtown, walking to the harbor. And they were, you know, Washington was still going to host a lot of festivities, just not the games. And it really came down to, at the end, it came down to either the Baltimore Washington bid or, from what I'm told, Foxborough. And I mean, I thought Foxborough was going to be in all along because Robert Kraft was on, you know, he was the honorary chairman of the bid committee. So the idea that Foxborough wasn't going to get in, especially in a sports market like Boston, seemed far-fetched anyway, but it seemed like it came down to those two. Yeah, very disappointing not to have the nation's capital involved, but there's a reason for it and a big reason for it. The NFL team did not maintain the stadium well, on top of the fact they never got a new stadium plan in place well ahead of time. And so you put all that together and FIFA was not impressed, and they had better places to go.
Yeah, I think Dan Snyder had other things to worry about, to tell you the truth, in the World Cup. Hey, so let's talk about the United States, the national team, and Copa America this summer. How are you feeling about their chances? A couple of injuries, you know, Dest is hurt, Tyler Adams is not at full form. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
I think, Dest is definitely out. He's out for the long term. Kind of a mystery. Adams had that great goal at Nations League. seemed to be back on stride, but he hasn't been playing, right, for Bournemouth?
Not much, anyway, yeah.
So, you know, those are two important parts, particularly Dest. Well, both of them, but Dest just brought such a element of unpredictability.
Yeah.
And the ability to attack out of the back, out of the flank. Just such a clever, technical player. Certainly temperamental. And we saw that get the best of him.
To say the least, yeah.
Yeah, in Trinidad last fall. How will they do? I mean, you look at it, they should, you know, they should get out of that group. They're the second best team in that group. If they fail to get out of that group, it's certainly a fail. The tournament's a failure. You know, there's no
excuse. Would you say that if they don't get out of that group, that Berhalter might be in trouble?
Yeah.
And would Klopp be available?
You have to bring up Klopp.
I'd say yes and no.
He's got a love affair with this guy.
Yeah, that's understandable. No, I think Berhalter's on the hot seat. If, you know, this is their big test before the World Cup. You know, there's still 2 years to prepare for World Cup.
Right, exactly.
Copa is the opportunity to play in a major tournament. You're playing it on home grounds. You know, it's Copa America's number three on the list behind World Cup and Euros. So here's your chance. And there's already some, you know, some trepidation about Berhalter. And I think within the Federation, they understand they have to get this right.
Right.
Ahead of the World Cup that they are hosting. So if they bomb in the group stage, I think his job might be in jeopardy.
It has to be.
Yeah, I think it has to be evaluated.
You're only as good as your last game or your last two games.
Well, I don't think that's true, Dave, but I think that the Federation has given coaches a long leash in historically with Arena, with Klinsmann certainly, and that even includes Berhalter with the last go round and the decision to take him again. So I think he's on a short leash, Stephen.
Well, I agree with you. He's on a short leash.
Yeah,
if he does poorly, I think he's getting launched.
Yeah, but I was saying, like, you're not as good as your last game, because they've really let, like, Klinsmann really just lost a lot of games. It really dug a hole, and they continued to go with him, maybe because it was Jurgen Klinsmann. But with Berhalter now, I think some people felt they played all right, but it was a bit of a letdown, and it always is. And yet he's been given a second chance, which is rare on a national team level. So I think this go-round, he does not have the latitude that he had. And so I guess we're both saying the same thing. He is on a short
list. Well, all right, but Kev, I agree with what you're saying, but look at what just happened. We get beaten by Jamaica, which was without their four or five best players. Okay, so now, boom, he's on the hot seat again, and then they rebound nicely, and then they win the next game. But again, with him, he's got a very, very short leash.
Right.
Yeah, I think so, and I think part of it is Matt Crocker is an outsider. He's not Galati or other people from, the internal soccer, U.S. soccer circles.
Family.
And I think Crocker has been given the power to do what he feels is necessary. And if they don't do well in Copa America, they're going to have to seriously look at what direction they want to go in with a coach. That said, you know, if they get through the group, which I think they will, and then you're on to the quarterfinals and most likely a matchup with Brazil or Colombia. And then, you know, then you're tested in a knockout game. And so
at home,
we'll at home. Yeah. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, they should be all right. I mean, if most of this team, if not everyone we've grown accustomed to seeing on the field is available, I think they'll be pretty good. I mean, they were that Mexico game. I mean, I know it's Mexico. I know it's CONCACAF, but the U.S. was dominant. They were far better than Mexico.
Right.
Absolutely.
It wasn't even close.
Absolutely. What nice way to rebound after getting spanked against Jamaica. I mean, that was incredibly deflating. That Jamaica game.
But again, Dave, that goal was kind of a bit of a fluke early on. You know, and then you're in a hole. They pack the net, they park the bus, and thank goodness the U.S. got out of it. But look, this is, you know, I'm talking about Klopp. This is the same thing Liverpool did. If, you know, that you don't finish your chances early, you give the team a chance in the second half. I thought the United States was a better team, but you put yourself a goal down in 20 seconds. It changes everything. Everything.
Yeah, but you have another 89 minutes and 40 seconds to right the ship, though, against a weaker, much weaker opponent. Anyway,
that's this game.
Getting back.
We don't even need Stephen to argue. He's just sitting here. He's like a referee, for God's sakes. He's got all this knowledge.
See where you started, Stephen. Cut it out, man.
Yeah, it's all my fault.
Hey, Steve, I want to get back since you're DC centric. I do want to ask you something. I'm sorry if I'm beating up DC a little bit, but DC United is the lone MLS team to have no participation in either the US Open Cup or the CONCACAF Champions Cup, and then they don't even have an MLS Next Pro team, and they finished 23rd in the Supporters Shield standings in 23. So yeah, I know I'm kind of beating up DC a little bit. What's the deal?
They should be beaten up. The fact that they don't have a developmental team. Every MLS team in the U.S. is in MLS Next Pro, except DC United. The Canadian teams are involved. Montreal is the other one. But Montreal's developmental team plays in the Canadian or Quebec league. So they have something up and running. DC does not. I mean, they have plans. They had a team at Loudoun United. They sold off that team. It had to remain a second division team, which isn't eligible for MLS Next Pro. They're going to put a third division team in MLS Next Pro, ideally in Baltimore, but they need to get a stadium plan set. And meanwhile, they're losing the opportunity to develop players. It doesn't mean they can't develop any players, but it just makes it a lot harder. You got to loan players to USL teams that are unaffiliated to you, so it's harder to get players back and forth.
Yep.
That's an issue.
Steven, I think this goes back to your point about a short bench. The one thing that a lower tier team does for you is a couple, two, three guys pop up, and it helps you. It strengthens your bench, and if you're dealing with a short bench,
in their defense, or to their credit, I shouldn't say in their defense, to their credit. They have developed some good young players. You know, Kevin Paredes has been at Wolfsburg, and a bunch of young players are getting quality time on the first team here, whether it's Ted Koo DiPietro, Christian Fletcher, now Jacob Merle, who's a draft pick, not a homegrown, but he's heavily involved. Matai Akinboni is an up-and-coming center back who I think we're going to hear a lot about the next few years. So they are developing players. They just don't have a unit, and that's that's a little.
It's interesting. It's interesting. You mentioned Kevin Paredes because he's a really dynamic player. Yeah. I think he should get a good look this summer, won't he?
He will most likely end up on the Olympic team,
right in France
because of his age. I mean, is he good enough to be on the senior national team? Absolutely, but yeah. Would he play regularly in Copa America, given the personnel? Probably not. So he's probably better off going to the Olympics. But then you run into complications there because the Olympics is not an official FIFA window. So, clubs can tell under 23 teams, no, your player can't go to the Olympics. Now, I think there is some flexibility there. Clubs understand that the Olympics can benefit a player and it's a short tournament. So I think, I would be surprised if, Kevin Paredes is not allowed to play in the Olympics by Wolfsburg, but you never know because these clubs are in preseason. It's a great opportunity for him. And I think it's a great opportunity for Wolfsburg to further, showcase him.
And us, we got some great soccer coming up this summer.
I think so, Stephen, we've gotten to know you a little bit, but now we want to maybe delve a little deeper and get to know you even more.
Getting to know you.
So are you ready for these rapid-fire questions?
Now it's a therapy session, Steve.
I'll try.
So our first question, we're going to go Mia Hamm or Alex Morgan?
Mia Hamm.
Okay. Messi or Pelé? I know it's tough. I know it's a crazy question, but you got to choose one, buddy.
Messi.
Okay. Name something old school that you love. I mean, you're a young guy, so let's go old school. Name something old school that you love.
In soccer or in
meatloaf?
In life.
Meatloaf.
Oh man, how about reading hard covered books?
Yeah, that is old school.
I don't read a. I will never read a book on a screen. Never.
Okay, all right. I like that one. Okay, are penalty kicks a good way to decide the winner?
Yes, they're out of options. Really, I mean, realistically,
like, why can't they just play to the death?
I could do that. I mean, NCAA is used to do that.
As a non-player.
Well, Kevin actually said that they should keep playing and maybe reduce the number of players, or maybe every, I don't know, Kev, what did you say, every 5 minutes, take another one every 10 minutes?
I think, you know, the NCAA was thinking about that, taking a player off every 10 to 15 minutes. So, you know, going 8v8, 7v7, you know, open the game up at the end of the game. So, you know, because
I love that idea.
Steven, you know this as well, because when, you know, like when Italy in a World Cup final, they're just playing not to lose that second half. They're just packing it in, and it makes for boring soccer. So I think someone's got to win, you know, and then certain teams hold on for the PKs. So,
well, I'll give you a little slice of trivia. I attended the longest soccer game in NCAA history.
Indiana, right? Finals?
Nope.
83, 85?
No, 1985. I was the sports editor of the student paper at American 1985 December. It was at the Seattle King Dome, the old King Dome, and UCLA beat American in the final, and it went 167 minutes.
Oh my goodness.
Was Brady on that team? Not Tom Brady. Adrian Gayton on that team? I played ball with him at Oceanside High School. How about that?
Yeah.
And God, you guys are old, man.
John Diffley, who's the assistant AD, I think, at St. John's.
Wow.
Was on
Dave Mazur, yeah.
AU team.
There really are no right or wrong answers, but I do have to say that your answer was wrong. Our penalty kicks a good way to decide to win. Your answer was wrong. Ginger or Marianne?
Marianne.
So, wait, Dave, I just want to say to Steven, like, you know, a job with HR, like I've never had a job with HR, and my girlfriend has it, and it's like the things they go through there, it's unbelievable. My friend is in trouble with his daughter. She's not talking to him now because he wore a sombrero at a Cinco de Mayo party. Like, oh my God, the bar is so low now. Dads, we're always putting our foot in our mouth, doing the wrong thing even when we're trying not to. It's terrible.
I'm going to end with this one. You were talking about the Foo Fighters earlier, and that you just read Dave Grohl's book. I presume that was a hardcover.
Yes.
So what was the last song you downloaded?
What did I download the other day? I think I downloaded some Neil Young the other day.
Okay.
Yeah. Who's that? Who's that, Stephen? New hip young artist.
I just bought tickets for later summer to Jason Isbell.
I just saw Springsteen, I think, what, 2-3 weeks ago. 3.5 hours, just fantastic. My youth. Yeah. Oh, you're not a Springsteen fan?
No, I love Springsteen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it really did it for me. You know, I want to ask, do you have any more questions, Dave, on the quickie?
No, I think we're good. Steve, you answered most of them correct, so I'm impressed.
I want to ask Steven one thing, and this is, you know, I'm a sort of a Boston sports fan. I grew up in Connecticut, which is like Switzerland between New York and Boston. So
yeah, I'm New Hampshire, so I'm all New England.
Oh, all right. Oh, wow. All right. So, you know, there's a feeling I get when I watch the Celtics, I watch the Red Sox. I love it. And the Patriots, it's always fun, but it's not nearly the level that I have when I watch the U.S. men's national team, that pit in my stomach that is there for the full 90 minutes. I worry about those guys. I worry about the coach. I worry about the fans. I worry about what the opposing fans are going to do. Like, why is that? What do you think it is? Why is it something? And this is where I feel like some people who don't follow the U.S. men's national team don't quite understand. It's this American pride with sports, everything. It's all rolled into one. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of that nervousness comes from just the lack of success, at the World Cup. There have been moments, obviously. But national teams represent us as a country, obviously, by definition. And that's the one thing, like, non-soccer people don't understand, because there are so few standing national teams in various sports that play regularly,
right?
The U.S. men's basketball team, men's or women's, how often do they play?
Right,
not very often. So you're going
to
root
there's,
for
there's
them.
Also a Globetrotter element to that. You know, it's like a kind of an all-star team that kind of jumps together. And it's also, you know, basketball is a sport that some of the other countries do play. You know.
So, yeah, I think that that's certainly part of it. You have these, you know, they play semi-regularly, but there are very few moments where you can make an enormous impact, you know, upsetting, you know, Brazil at a World Cup or, you know, the game in Qatar playing the Netherlands. This is their moment. This is it. It's here.
Yeah. Beat
the Netherlands, and this moment will go down in history. And so you're wanting it so badly for it to happen. You know it's probably not going to happen, but the possibility is there, you know.
Right.
And so I think that's where all the angst originates
from,
perhaps.
You know, let me ask you one other thing. I just thought of this one as well. You know, because I look at the Premier League coverage, I really enjoy it. I think NBC does a great job, and I'm not just saying that because Dave works with them. But I think it's fantastic.
Thank you, Kev. Thank you.
But some of the best coverage, the best World Cup coverage I think I've ever seen from America was for some reason that South Africa World Cup. I don't know if you agree with that. I don't know what it was about that one. I don't know if it was maybe where I was in my life or whatever, but it seemed to be the excitement. It seemed like journalism. It seemed like, you know, sports. It seemed like we were doing it. Because I think Americans do sports broadcasting the best. But for some reason, we get in our heads when we do soccer a little bit, we're like, oh, it must be, we need a couple of English guys on there, or we need, you know, like, but, which I've always had a problem with, but I think that one seemed to be, to stand out to me, to be the model that maybe we should continue to shoot for.
Yeah, no, it's funny that, like, I'm at all these World Cups, so I don't see the coverage. I don't see the TV coverage. I mean, sometimes I'll get like a special link to see some of it, but for the most part, I'm just reading what people think.
Right.
Of the coverage back home. And certainly, you know, Fox receives a lot of criticism, has received a lot of criticism at World Cups. And, you know, you see a lot of people turning to the Spanish outlets, even if they don't speak Spanish fluently or understand Spanish fluently.
I always miss Bob Lee for some reason. He's a friend of the show, but there was something about him. You know, he won so many Emmys and, you know, did Sports Center for so long. I felt like, okay, we've arrived. Bob Lee is talking about soccer.
The context, the aura that he brought, that is certainly missed. And that's nothing against, you know, Rob Stone, who's a friend of mine. He's just different. I think the South Africa, there were so many great human interest stories, cultural, geographical, political stories that came out of South Africa.
And those damn vuvuzelas. The trip was crazy.
That was something. My ears are still ringing from that.
Yeah. Well, Stephen, I tell you, but you know, Bob was great, and as are you. As I said earlier, you cover this game in such depth, and you've done it for so long and so well that just as a soccer fan, as a former player, I just my heart goes out to you. God bless you for covering this game in such a great way. We're so happy you joined us on Over the Ball. We hope you join us again.
Thank you. Thanks, Stephen. Thank you.
Thanks for the kind words. It's great.
Stephen Goff, everybody. What a good dude, huh? Stephen Goff. I think, you know, it's funny, Dave. You read these guys, and I just see some sort of, I just imagine some sort of, I don't know, bookish guy with 25 TVs in front of him, you know, like the Wizard of Oz, just watching soccer all day, but a great guy. And
so informative. And, you know, you could, like most of our guests, we could speak to them all day. The problem is, as soon as you get down on the subject of music, I can go off on a tangent and speak to them for just 24 hours just on the Foo Fighters alone.
Right. Well, what I've noticed about you is you are big into nostalgia. So you always go back to those old World Cups and things, which I think people need to hear because people, you know, people's memories are short, and people who are following this game sometimes don't know about the 94 World Cup, the 98 World Cup. You know what and Stephen almost reminds me of Grant Wall, you know, who he did a special on last week.
Peace.
Yeah, they remember the games and the goals and who scored it. And I, you know, I've watched all of them. But I don't remember them. I can't pull it up like that. It's pretty amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. What the heck was I going to say? Yeah. So anyway, so when you talk about the Foo Fighters. Oh, by the way, you don't give me any credit for not bringing up the NASL in like 3-4 weeks.
You know what? I got to give you your props. You have not brought it up. You've brought back World Cups from like the War of 1812, but you haven't brought up NASL. So it's good. No, and I'm a huge fan of NASL. I mean, for me as a kid, that's why I started to play in the first place.
You want credit though, because you were breaking my chops.
What I get to give you credit for is, when you break your chops, then you're one of the boys. But what I got to give you credit for is, you know, we've classically asked that question, who do you like better, Messi or Ronaldo? And what I thought was pretty cool about the question you asked him about Messi and Pelé, that's a question that's a head scratcher. That's like, wow, okay, yeah, I got to think about that one. And what I think that says is, as Messi is such a great player, Ronaldo, fantastic player. We've been blessed to have these two guys playing while we're, you know, of television watching age at the same time. But Messi head and heels above Ronaldo, not only as a player, but also the decisions he's made and the type of person he is. Yeah. And I think that's where it really makes it quite interesting to talk about Pelé, because Pelé was a wonderful, warm-hearted person who always tried to do the right thing. It didn't always...
Great ambassador for this sport. I mean, by the way, if you ask Ronaldo's parents, Messi or Ronaldo, I think they would probably have to
No way. I don't know. You're a parent. Are you kidding me? My God. You know, I had the great Miami Herald writer on once, Dave Barry, and I said, he said, if you ask any soccer parent what position their kid should play, all 11 will say, center forward. My kid's the best, center forward. So, but that was great. We've got to have Steven on again because we have so much soccer coming up this summer. We'll cover it all on Over the Ball. And Dave, great idea to actually reach out and talk to him because as I said, I've been reading him for a long, long time.
Man, he knows his stuff. So listen, before we call it a wrap, before we wrap this bad boy up, let's give shout outs to Tim Howard, who in my opinion is the greatest U.S. keeper in history. And I'll go Casey Keller number two, and maybe Miola number three. But Tim Howard, if I have to pick an American keeper on my team, he's the guy. So congrats to him. Hall of Fame, baby.
I would say that's a great question to ask instead of Pelé, Messi. Maybe even you could say Howard or Casey Keller. I think Tony was a good field player. Tony was a good basketball.
Number three. I'm giving him top three. I'm a big fan of his.
Of Tony, and Tony was a good basketball player. So was Tim Howard. I think Tim Howard might have been All-State basketball player. So I covered him when he was with the. Was it before the Red Bulls? What would they call the Metro Stars? I was covering him before he went to Manchester United.
Yep.
I think that was on maybe he owed Friedel a beer for that one. But congratulations to Tim Howard. He was out in Nantucket this summer, hanging out at the Cisco Brewery with my friend Jay Harmon. They all find Cisco Brewery and they go out to Nantucket in the summertime. It's funny.
Yeah, I think he had 22 saves. I think it was 22 saves against Brazil.
but like you're just a piece of hanging meat at that point. You're just taking on shots. You're just like, it's unbelievable. But it's almost like hockey though, Dave. When a keeper is a goaltender is feeling it, his oats, he's in the zone. It's almost impossible to score against him.
While we're on the subject of giving props, I do want to give props to Ipswich Town. They've been promoted to the Premier League after a 22-year absence. So, I love the underdogs. Ipswich Town, way to go, baby. You're back in.
Is that the team Will Ferrell just bought into or something?
No, he joins the list of Leeds United investors.
I got to call my friend Artel O'Hanlon. He was an actor, stand-up comedian. He was in that show Father Ted on BBC. He's a huge Leeds fan. And we used to go back and forth because, he started blaming some of the Americans for the shitty play there. And I'm like, they were some of the best players on the pitch, Artel. Give me a break. So, all right, man. This was a fun one. So I head off. I'm off next week. You guys are going to take control. John Bolster will be your co-host, Dave. I'm heading to Thailand and where else? To Malaysia and Singapore for 2 weeks. So I'm out of here. So I'll report back on that.
Okay, my friend. Well, have a lovely, wonderful, amazing trip. It's going to be a trip of a lifetime. Looking forward to hearing all about it.
Yeah, and John Bolster was a great player himself, comes from a big soccer-playing family. He's a journalist as well. So he's been one of our contributors here on Over the Ball for a long, long time. And he's been with me since Sirius XM FC at ESPN. He's got some great game going on. So, Dave, you'll enjoy that for sure. All right, everybody, for Over the Ball, I'm Kevin Flynn. That's Dave Gallego. You can't see either of us, but we're here. And the Wizard of Oz is Ken Park from Octane Media. That's all the time we have today. I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, but tune into us next week for Dave Gallego and John Bolster on OTB.
Have comments or questions? Give us a call or shoot us a text at 727-914-9998. 727-914-9998.